This call is being recorded.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, how are you?
Well, and you?
Not too bad. I always check ahead of time, and then I thought, well, I'll just sit here and read email while I'm waiting.
Yeah,
Just to
we just
try to
had.
make sure I can log in.
Yeah, fantastic. And we're going to just get set up on this side too and join the call. So we'll be on mute for a few minutes.
Sure, no problem.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, Dan. Hey, John.
Hey, Carl.
Good
Morning.
morning.
Can you hear me all right?
Dan, can you hear us okay?
All right, great. I'm gonna put you on mute just for 1 minute, and I'll be right back. Hang on. I'll dial back in if I get disconnected for a sec.
If it's okay with everybody, I think I'd like to give us about 3 or 4 minutes to get started.
Hi, this is Robin Nozick. I'm joining.
Hey, Robin.
Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Having connection challenges join, and then we'll get started.
Right. Hi, Carl, it's John. I'm back. Are you there?
Yeah, John, we can hear you okay.
Okay, great.
Are we actually expecting anybody else? Just a bit of a roll call at the moment. Here in the Cape Town office, we have Ronwin, Tariro, Linda, myself, and Pete joining us via Skype. I see online, reading from left to right, we have John, Daniel, Christine, and Robin. Anybody, are we expecting anybody else to join the call today? Carolyn. No response from my
I'd like Adam to start joining these calls as well. I can't remember whether I sent him the call and information, but he'll start joining in the next go around.
Fantastic, John. Thank you. I will also make sure that Adam is added to the mailing list and is aware of when the call schedules. We'll just give 2 minutes to see if Carolyn pops on, and otherwise we'll get started. I hope everybody has had a chance to look at the agenda as well as the wiki site.
About the wiki site, was there a link sent out? I apologize if I missed it. Is it possible to send that out again, maybe to the whole group? I haven't looked at it because I haven't seen a link specifically.
So I'll send it out right now on the back of that
email.
Okay, Linda.
Great, thanks.
While Linda's sending that out, we are working on making it more user-friendly to remember this day. So it will not stay this / question mark or whatever comes around with it. So I think Linda's about to send that, and just respecting our time, we'll get started. So first, welcome everybody. I think we've got our roll call done at this stage. If anybody joins, we'll call out to them and make sure everybody is aware who is online. So the agenda for today's call is looking brief introductions. I think we've gone through that. Linda's got a few requirements questions that we'd like to raise with the team itself. We'll then continue with Linda looking at the wiki and any thoughts or comments around it. Hopefully a bit of a guided dive into some of the key areas for input. Point number four is a concept which I wanted to raise with this team about a broader blood systems community call. We're a place for countries to engage, and we'll talk about that. The upcoming Lesotho visit as well, and then any other business. So before we get started, are there any other business items we'd like to talk about on the call today?
No, nothing for me either.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Great. Well, fantastic. Robin, thank you for joining the call. I think if my memory doesn't fail me, this is your first call, and welcome back to the BSSP and BSIS project team. Really looking forward to continuing with the exciting project. And as you probably found out, we do have an award that allows us to continue this work. So we'll continue it until we're told to stop, which we're hoping is close to never. So that'll be fun.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Great. All right, so I think moving on quickly, I'm going to hand over to Linda to run us through some of the requirements clarification questions. And Linda, over to you.
Great. So a couple of people have actually already responded. So thank you, Pete, for your comments. And also Rob Wilkinson did come back with some answers as well. Just to note that these first few questions that we're putting out on these calls are fairly simple things, really, just to try and get the process moving. We will fairly soon be moving into more complex areas, and Daniel and I will be looking at how to put together documentation beforehand to give people a good feel for the areas that we really need a lot of clarification on. Some fairly simple ones. The first one is around just agreeing the terminology for the use of the term donation batch. So really just describing how donations are grouped together according to when and where they were actually collected. So we need that information. Some of the feedback we've had is that donation batch could possibly be confused with a test batch, which is something else altogether. We suggested either calling it a donation session or possibly a donation clinic, but again, be confused with the physical location of the clinic. So I'd just like some feedback from the people on the call as to what is the standard term for this, but what is the term that is going to cause the least confusion?
Well, hi, this is Robin. I'll just jump in. And I think I saw Rob Wilkinson's answer or one of the answers you already got. I think everybody uses the term donation batch, and they also use the term test batch. But I don't see much. I don't see anybody getting confused that's using the software. I mean, I think, first of all, usually the people doing the testing are different from the people that are drawing donors. So I would stick with donation batch if I got a vote. So I wouldn't want you to change that. So that's my answer.
Thanks, Robin.
Hi, this is Christine, and I agree with Robin. I don't believe that I don't see the confusion between the two, but if someone made that suggestion that it could be confusion, it might be good to know why. Because there are different folks that use the do collections versus testing.
This is a stork day.
Thank you, Christine. It seems like we're really coming to a consensus around this. Just to give some feedback as to why this is coming up now, one of the things that we're working on in this current development sprint is harmonizing all the terminology within the system, actually within the code base. So this is just one of the things that popped up. So it might not be that relevant in actual practice. Any other comments on that, or can we move on to the next question?
I think it's great, Linda, that we've got consensus on that. We'll look at retaining the donation batch. So let's move on to the next one.
Okay, so the next one is around the donor assessment data. So that's the essentially the clinical data that's entered on the medical questionnaire that's actually filled in and written on the form, so things like blood pressure and weight and hemoglobin and so on. So what we just want clarification on is that this assessment data should be allowed to be entered even if the donation batch has already been closed. And the main use case for this is that in the case where data capture is actually done after the fact by a data capturer, so it's not actually done during the clinic session itself. So the risk of not having this should not really impact the safety of the donation, but it may impact the safety of the donor. So, and again, we got some nice feedback from Rob and Pete on that email trail. Just wanted to ask other people's opinions on that.
Okay, again, hi, this is Robin. Sorry. I guess my opinion is that I'm wondering why you would want data entry people to actually enter this data and possibly make a mistake in copying the data from a form. So I was wondering why you did, and it's not going to, like you said, it's not going to affect safety of the unit because it's entered after the fact, except you could, I suppose, have rules that will have you the unit be quarantined after the fact. But what I see happening is if you're not using the questionnaire in real time to you know, change the status of a donor, what I see happening is that this donor questionnaire gets scanned in as just as a PDF file to be saved with the donor. And the donation, I'm wondering, and again, I apologize because I haven't been on these calls, so perhaps the reason was described, but I'm wondering why that's not being considered. And, of course, I do understand that the safety of the donor is very important, and I don't want to disparage that, but I think re-entering data that's on a form by other people who weren't talking to the donor is more dangerous than not using that data.
Well, this is Christine. One of the reasons I believe that the information was entered after the fact was because the donor wasn't even registered yet, due to the fact that they can't, that like in Lesotho, they don't have the ability to take out the laptops on the mobiles, so they come back and enter information. Now, does the donor information with regards to all the clinic data, their hemoglobin, I think the hemoglobin is important, but sometimes you don't need to enter the blood pressure and the weight, but that is a PDF and that can be set aside. But more importantly is that this is what the whole registration process happens after the fact because of situations where in many of the countries that I work in, they don't have the ability to take a laptop out on the mobile.
I think I understand that, but I think what I see happening, at least in the States, when they don't enter the donor questionnaire at the time of the donation, then, yeah, I understand they're entering information after the fact, but usually what they just say is whether the donor's qualified or not based on the questionnaire. But I don't – and maybe I've just not seen enough the systems, but I don't see them trying to enter all of the donor answers to the questions. Is that what we're trying to enter after the fact? Is
no.
All of the answers to the questions on the questionnaire, or just we're registering the donor after the fact?
They don't. At least I know in Lesotho when they were doing the testing that they don't enter all the information. I think they selected, and I can't say for a fact which elements they selected to enter, but I saw most of it was the donor registration.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I read wrong. So if it's that you have to be able to register a donor after the fact, yeah, I've seen that a lot, and yeah, that's
right.
That happens a lot. I just was worried that we were trying to enter the donor questionnaire information, all of it, after the fact. I think that's dangerous, but certainly I have seen a lot of times where the registration happens after the fact and when the blood comes back. So yes, that has to happen, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree, Robin. I know that they are not entering all the information, all the questions, because some countries, the questionnaires are very in-depth in a lot of questions, and others that are shorter. It depends on their blood loss and the donor qualification requirements by each country. But and also for the Africa Society for Blood Transfusion, the standards, they're required to ask it, but there's no way, none of that is required to be put into an electronic system. That's still left up to the blood center and what information has to be in there.
Is there anything that you wanted to add to that discussion? Because I know you did mention a possible compromise around allowing the entry of data, but only for a limited period.
John, I think that's just, you'll recall that when we had this debate previously, agreed that we would try and use the tool to guide people towards best practice and not falling into lazy habits and give them the opportunity to gather the data after the fact, because what's going to happen is they'll just fall into arrears. So you'll recall that previously we were advocating very strongly that there should be as much real-time capture as is possible. And then certainly the registration of the donor should be as close to real-time as is possible, assuming that they don't have laptops at their disposal, which means which should be within the 24-hour period since the donation was taken.
Sorry, Daniel's also just reminded me, one of the questions we had on last week's call was around not being able to add, that is, register new donors if we didn't have an open donation batch. And actually, your comments, Robin, feed actually directly into that.
Yeah, I think the issue that we discussed last week was that if there was no batch open, you wouldn't be able to register a donor. And I'm not sure if what Robin's saying would go against that rule, in that you're saying that might be done after the fact, when the batch actually isn't open. I just couldn't figure out if that did actually impact on it or not. But are you saying that we would be able to, that you should be able to add donors after the fact when the batch and everything is closed?
Well, I guess, Daniel, this is Robin. I'm not sure what closing the batch, and again, this is my first call, so I'm sorry if I, missed something that everybody else knows, but I'm not sure what closing the batch does. I mean, what it's, I know it finalizes the batch, but I'm not sure what that actually does. So I don't really see a problem in keeping the batch open until actually the testing is done. And what I'm saying is I'm not trying to put it in the framework of does the batch need to be open or closed, because I don't quite understand that yet. But I'm just saying that I have seen many, especially large clients, that have to enter this donation information after the blood has already gotten back to the donor center from a mobile. So I'm saying that data has to get entered in. I'm suggesting that no one tries to enter the entire questionnaire set of answers in the system. So that's number two, what I'm saying. But if the batch needs to stay open for some purpose to do this, then yeah, the batch should remain open until the data from the donation and the testing on the blood is done, and we have a, final, is this blood good or not? And so yes, I guess the batch needs to remain open for that period of time. But I don't know exactly what that means in terms of batch remaining open or closed. Maybe we could talk about that offline.
Sure. I think also just to distinguish between the donation batch and the test batch, because I mean, I think what you're saying is the test batch will need to remain open until all the, is the blood okay or not? But the donation batch, like one, the logic to add a test batch is that you can only add donation batches that have been closed off. In other words, you can't add add samples to a test batch until someone's actually kind of said, okay, we're closing this donation batch, and we're saying that it's ready for testing.
Oh, okay. So that's the prompt that says it's ready for testing. Okay. Well, I need to think about this, but I've been in a large donor center, and it usually happens then, where when the blood returns, they don't even know who the donor is on that blood, but they've started processing the units, taking, separating, even testing, and the donation information is still being entered into the system. So that's just a real life example. So whether the batch needs to be, if the batch still needs to stay open in order to get that data in, but the testing can't begin until the batch is closed, then I think you have an issue there, because oftentimes donation information is still being entered into the system after the fact and the testing has begun. Right. So I don't know what to tell you to do there. I've just been in that situation.
And Robin, this is Christine and everyone, the same thing. I mean, this goes on day after day in and day out. The donation information is always entered. If you don't do it real time, it's always entered after the fact. And testing starts immediately because the two aren't connected until they come together to, is the unit okay or not at that point? But they're very separate pieces of the system. There's a wall, you know, they just aren't, they're not connected until they have to make a decision about this unit.
I'm just wondering if it's useful to maybe not call it closing a donation batch, because really what you're doing is it's signifying that that's going for testing. The reason for doing that is that you basically add your, instead of selecting your starting DIN and your end DIN, when you kind of creating your test batch, you just add a donation batch to that. So the main purpose of that is that you can't add additional donations to a test batch from that same batch. So the kind of logic of closing the batch is really more about saying this batch is ready for testing. So we might need to just relook at what we mean by a closed donation batch.
Yeah, I think what Christine and I are saying is that the batch, in order to get all of the donation information in at some sites you're going to hit. And again, it's not the optimum. We would prefer that they do it in the right order, you know the donor and that the donor's okay before they bleed the donor. And I think CDC, FDA certainly would like to see that. But I've seen it where they're FDA approved and this is an approved process. All the blood comes back. They usually dump the data about the donor electronically, but it doesn't matter. The fact is the data about the donation has to get entered in. It's done after the fact. So I guess if you need to close the batch to allow testing on that, the units in that batch, then you'll need to allow donation data to be entered on a closed batch, if that's the way it works. Because that's the question in front of us, I guess, is should we allow donation data to be entered if a batch is closed? And it sounds to me, maybe not saying it's closed, but saying it's, but understanding it's closed to add any more donors to this batch, any more units to this batch, but you can still enter unit information on the donor. While the batch is closed, if that batch needs to get for testing, because the testing needs to begin right away as soon as the blood comes back, before all of the data is entered in a lot of cases. So however that needs to happen, I think it's important.
This is John. That sounds logical to me. Closing the batch to new donations, but allowing individual records to be edited during the process.
All right, thank you very much. That was actually very helpful. Are there any further comments on that, or can we move on to the next question?
Linda, before we do, this is John. Normally our team meeting starts at 10 a.m., but for this week, and this week only, we're starting a half an hour early because we have got another call at 10:30. So I'm going to drop off just now, but I'll be in touch over the next couple of weeks.
Thanks, John.
Great, thanks.
Thanks, bye.
The next question, the last question we've got for today is around coding of pediatric packs. And I'm actually going to ask Daniel just to talk through that for you.
Sure, thanks. So I think it's quite a straightforward issue of we need a code for the pediatric packs. just to be able to distinguish between the different packs. The question is more around whether this would need to be configurable between implementations, or whether it would be kind of acceptable for us just to move ahead with, like, your, you know, adding an A, B, C, D, E suffix onto the pack number. So I guess it also depends whether, you know, whether countries are, if a country is kind of adopted like the ISBT standard or something, then they'd need to use that one. But I guess it's just a question on whether it would be useful to have that configurable, as to what that suffix consists of, that pediatric code, or if it's acceptable just to have a fixed, you know, this is how we do it, and that's fine.
Already agreed is that we would try as far as possible to mimic the ISBT standards.
Yeah.
I think Rob has provided you with a fairly elegant reminder of what we actually decided previously. I don't see any good reason to change that.
Great. Yeah, Rob's feedback was really useful.
I agree with that. I think that probably it took a long time to get a consensus on the ISBT standards, but they work well, especially for splitting units. The A0, and then if you split further, which happens a lot with babies to take syringes out of a unit, if you split it further, doing A1, A2, A3, or B1, B2, B3, that seems to work really well in the United States. And that's all I can speak for right now. So I would say stick with that, and I agree, you don't have to follow the ISBT standards to the T if you don't want, but there are certain things that work. The DIN number works, and this part, splitting a unit, works, and I wouldn't change it.
Great, thanks.
Thanks, everyone. That was really helpful. I'm just going to move on very briefly to talk about the wiki. Really just to say, I have just resent that link out to the mailing list. Really just to say, at the moment, it is just that single page with information mainly around the call schedule and how to join the call. And we will be having all the minutes and the call recordings available on here as well. And the development roadmap we also thought would be useful and the sort of thing that people would be interested in. But if you have any ideas or requests about the type of information you'd really like to see on this, please just let me know and we'll start to build it out. Back to you, Carl.
I just want to check, has everybody had an opportunity to open the link and make sure it works for them?
Yep.
Yes.
Right. Just as a process note, I think a lot of us are figuring this Uber thing out as it goes. I have done a bit of tech support, and unfortunately, it looks like Uber Conference does not work with Internet Explorer or Safari if you're on Mac. I put a note in the conference page that you do need to have Google Chrome or Firefox. But most of us are getting there slowly but surely. But if you're inviting others to the conference, please remember that is a method of joining. And if you can't and you're in the US, each week, Thurio does put out the conference connection details where you can dial into the US numbers. And those, I believe, may be toll-free. The South African ones are standard landline rates. But if you're looking to dial in to Uber Conference via Skype, then I would suggest you dial the toll-free number. And we'll probably add the how to dial in via Skype to the details as we go on. But a bit of admin on the side there. We really would encourage everybody to look at the page, as Linda said, and give us some guidance as to what are the things you're wanting to see that would make life easier to understand, better to be understood for the actual work that's going on within the BSIS roadmap at the moment. I'm going to take this opportunity to segue to an idea that came up through discussions with a few people and on a conference call last Friday. Is should we be considering the idea of opening up a specific call schedule for more of a broader community call, where this team is really focused, as we're finding out now, on answering some key technical questions on the requirements and the installation and the development of the BSIS tool itself. But we've had a few thoughts that this may not be the right forum or platform for interested countries to come and engage with us, that we may be over technical within this group, and countries may need to have a more high level engagement aspect with us. So what's this about, this idea of creating a once a month space for interested groups and countries to come and ask what's going on with BSIS as a community, as a tool, a place where we can demonstrate any functionality that's available within it, but retain these calls primarily to deal with the nitty-gritties, as we are at the moment, of key features within it. I just want to pause there and get a feel from those on the call and around the table here. What do we think? Is this something that we want to do, or are we too early for it? Are we too late for it? Is there already something like this? I'd love to hear some thoughts.
Well, if I could just add something.
Go ahead, Pete.
Or just a perspective and an observation. I think we need to be extremely careful that we don't bring a whole bunch of new players on and we continue to rehearse conversations and get decisions that we made over a year ago remade. So I would argue very strongly that we keep this call as a business call so we can move this project forward and get workable installations in place in two or three countries across the continent. I think the idea of a community of practice or whatever you choose to call it is a very, very good one, and I strongly support that. But the two efforts need to be very, very separated, and I don't think it's inappropriate that we start now, even though you don't have a workable commodity to offer.
Anybody else want to weigh in?
Yeah, this is Robin. I agree with Pete. I think this call, if it's going to be along the lines of the call, you know, we're just doing, these are the kinds of things that are, although we can poll clients or places, you know, donor centers around where we live, you know, work or live, and get information to help you do this right. I don't think that you want the clients hearing some of the discussion that we're gonna have on this call. I was trying to look to see what other, because there are some other vendors that I work with that have similar kinds of sessions with potential clients. And I was looking to see what they call it. I can't remember what it's called, but I think calling it a community call is fine, but I would keep it separate, and I don't know that you'd need to have that call more than once a quarter or something like that. So that's my feeling. I agree that it needs to be two separate calls. I don't think you need to air any kind of laundry in front of them.
Any thoughts from around the table here in Cape Town or anybody on the call?
I think I agree with the consensus. And I also like the suggestion of once a quarter. I think if you have them too often, make sure that engage, they don't find it that useful.
We'll maintain the idea. I think the concept of just in the open source world, and what we've seen work in other projects, which is in line with what we're hearing on the call here, is to separate out the community call and the developer calls. It separates, and in that paradigm, what we see here, the developer calls are really the business calls, it's the conversation we're having at this particular moment. The community calls are where you can come sit and hear about what's going on in the broader community of things. We'll continue to hold this idea gently and encourage us to look at how we engage with it. And I think if there's space from SafePlan and from ADB's perspective what would be valuable for this concept of a community call to deliver? Is there value in it? What would you want to do in these areas? And knowing that the development of the BSIS product and the questions of the safety around it and all those aspects of what we're talking about now happen in these calls. You know, what would the community call address? Could it be raising challenges of engaging with ABEX or vice versa? I'd encourage us to think about that, and I'm going to ask us to just send information in over the mailing list or add it to the wiki, and we'll happily talk about this as we go forward.
Okay, this is Robin again. Just to, if you wanted to call it something else other than a community call, I found the term I was looking for. What I've seen being used for this type of thing, kind of showing new, you know, the new technology and polling certain questions that we may want answered, I've heard it called a focus group. So instead of community group, so you might consider the term focus group. For this group outside of the group that we're in right now. Anyway, I just wanted to let you know I found that.
Thanks, Robin. I think we're going to have to look at how that ties in and see what we come with that. But I'd like to keep this idea on the agenda for next week to see if anything else comes up as we go through it. And really, as I say, encourage us to look at what from our experiences, what we think we want to get to who the audience for this is. As the focus group could be key countries already or close to committing to engaging with us. And the other question is, do we tie this community to a particular, dare I say the word, product? Or is it more the community of practice of BECCSs in low resource settings and you know, the receivers of them? You know, what kind of things we're looking at, a learning network, how that works, you know, where do blood services go for important questions around BECCS and technology tools. Yeah. Well, I think moving on and a little bit more focus. So, Christine, you're heading to Lesotho in 2 weeks' time. And I think I just want to say that the GEMBI team is, well, the GEMBI team being me, at this stage will be coming laden with questions and comments and instructions on what to review and come back to the team with, but I'll be joining the Lesotho for probably that week of the 20th of July.
All right.
I'm hoping that any unrest or fun and games that we're seeing in the news at the moment has dissipated by then. So,
yeah.
Your plans still for that week, and are those confirmed and tied up?
Yes, well, I have my travel arrangements, and Diane's working with Malikwa on the schedule outside of thesis that week, but I will be there from the 19th. That's when I arrive in Nasiru and leaving 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the 24th. So any part of that week that you are going to be there, we're developing the terms of reference right now. And so I wasn't sure of the dates that you had dates of the week you were going to be there or if you're planning all week.
Yeah, I think that's also the question that we've got internally as a team here. We're working up our internal TORs that we think we're definitely going to need to get out of this visit. And one of the shared ones is definitely some face time with yourself. And mm-hmm. Crispin joining you for that week, is that correct?
Yes, Crispin will be there, Diane and Gail and Ben. The whole team's going to be there because we haven't been there for a while. But Crispin and I will be looking at their quality systems and also any of their beta testing that they've done on. Cause I haven't looked at what they have done on BSIS. So that will be Crispin and my focus that week.
Great. I think those are already two, three key things that we've got on our TRs to have a look at. Is we've got the same interest to see how they've engaged with BSIS. What has the experience been? Challenges, fixes that we need with it. So we'll also be engaging with Malekwa over the next week or so just to make sure that we've got some time with her, hopefully. But yeah, I'll probably take this conversation off the call to make sure that we're not overtaxing an already busy blood services with two groups being there, and hopefully we can be synergistic. I can fit in with some of the work that you're needing to do and go for that. From the broader community, is anything particular that you feel we should be looking out for as our beta implementation of BSIS any feedback that we want. And our JB team will think a bit about it, but it would be great to any thoughts or feedback and say, hey, don't forget to think of. Right. If you do think of anything, please feel free to mail myself, and we'll definitely have a conversation and chat about that. Right, that brings us to the end of our AOBs, well, the end of our standing agenda. I just want to check if there's any other items of business that have come up from the team. The one that I would like to raise is just the conference call for facilitation. Silence is a no. Right, so something that I want to check for a few calls in at this stage. It would be good to get a community sense of, is Uber Conference something that we feel we can carry forward at this stage for the next few weeks, or should we really be looking at trying to identify an alternative method for conference calling? And if so, any suggestions would be very welcome. Any thoughts on Uber Conference?
Okay, well, this is Robin. This is my first time using it. I've never actually heard of it before, and I had no trouble getting in. So. The only thing is, does it have a screen sharing, or I guess it does have a screen sharing component, and I don't know if that works. And WebEx and GoToMeeting, they work very well when you know everybody shares the screen and everyone can see the person's screen. If later on you want to start getting into showing us stuff in the system or documentation, I don't know if Uber Conference works well for that. But for the phone call, I had no trouble at all.
And this is Christine. I echo Robin's statements, because I've used it now for this, the third or fourth call, and I've never had any trouble with it. From calling in from the U.S., I'm not sure, if you were calling in from anywhere else, but it's been fine for me.
Okay, we'll continue with it. Just two points here. It does have a screen sharing option when you're online with it. And I think, the only reservation is that your browser you need to use is Google Chrome or Firefox. So it may pose an issue with our CDC friends if they're needing to share a device. But it does also have apps for the phones, and we'll continue to review that as it goes ahead. Well, then I think we're probably done at this stage, unless there are any thoughts, questions, or comments we'd like to raise. Great. All right, Nick, go ahead.
Nothing from me.
All right, next call will be in 2 weeks' time, same slot, and we look forward to touching base with everybody then.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Yes, thanks, everyone.